My name is Suzanne, and I am an alcoholic. My home group is the STEP group, which meets in West Springfield, Massachusetts, and my sobriety day is February 7th, 2006. We welcome you to Bridging the Gap from Treatment to AA. And at this moment, I'd like to ask for a moment of silence and gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years. Again, welcome. We have for you three speakers who are here to share their experience, strength, and hope. I'm going to introduce all three of them at this moment. And one is Brian M. from Minnesota. David W. from California. And Janine B. from Missouri.
Okay. Well, hi, everybody. My name is Brian Murphy. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April 9th of 2000. Yay. My home group is Fox Hall Chapter 7. We meet on Thursday nights in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. I sponsor, and I am most importantly sponsored, which is excellent. I'm really excited to be here. This is my second international, and this is just really to Rick, when he sent me the email and asked me to do this, it was really, really cool. Oh, great. This is so stupid. All right, so anyway. We're here to talk about bridging the gap. I have a little experience in treatment, meaning I went there. And I didn't pay much attention. The first experience I had with members of Alcoholics Anonymous coming into the treatment center that I was at, they told me about a meeting that they go to, and I saw how excited they were. Because just as, and I'm sure you all have heard this and you all experience this, at that point in my life wasn't very great. At that point, I had three DWIs. I couldn't hold a job. I was a drunk, and I was a practicing drunk. And my soon-to-be ex-wife was threatening to leave me. The kid, everything was falling apart, so I was in treatment. And this was in 1995 in Minneapolis. And some people came into the treatment center I was at, and they gave me the pitch that they had, which was talking about Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was my first experience with treatment and AA all together at the same time. One of the things that happened was I didn't pay any attention to anything that was going on around me. So as a result, I was not able to stay sober. I went to meetings. When I got out of that treatment center, I went to their meeting, and the doors were locked at the hall, and they had said, if you're coming, you should have called. And I was like, well, I didn't know that, so I'm not coming back. So I ended up... Then in 2000, I... officially sobered up. I got a sponsor. My life had gone downhiller at that point, and it just was not happening for me. So I sobered up, and I started working a program of recovery, talking with my sponsor, admitting my problems, doing the things that I need to do to get and stay sober. And I hated it. It was the worst because I was outside of my comfort zone. My comfort zone was chaos. That's what I lived in. Robbing Peter to pay Paul, living here to do this, every one little thing along the way, solve this problem, another one comes, instead of getting to the root of them all. And then I started working with my sponsor and working on the root of it all. And getting all that straightened out got me to a point where life started to get better. And this morning, I was at the meeting, Joy of Helping Others. And that's, I was thinking about this meeting and that meeting because I was really terrified about being in this meeting because it was coming up and I was thinking, which is always a good problem for me. So I was thinking about what the joy of helping others and where did that come from and what do I have to talk about that? And it came to me as, well, I worked on the Bridging the Gap program in Southern Minnesota, Area 36. And what that program does is it helps to bridge that gap between treatment and AA. As you're getting out of treatment, you can contact the temporary contact desk at the Minneapolis Intergroup office, which is sponsored by the Area 36 Treatment Facilities Chair. It's a joint thing that they do. And what you can do there is you fill out, when you're in treatment, we have these forms. And this form is sponsored, it's the Bridging the Gap Temporary Contact Program, a bridge between alcoholism treatment and AA. We have these pamphlets that we have up in Minnesota. And it's a 12-step program, or it's a 12-step service sponsored by Southern Minnesota Area 36 of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what it has in here is information for the treatment. What is a temporary contact? And it goes through all of these pamphlets that they have at all these treatment facilities. And the headlines are why a temporary contact, what you can expect, and how to attain one. And the way to obtain a temporary contact is we have this form on the inside. And that member of the soon-to-be member of Alcoholics Anonymous will fill this form out, and it does say, please print clearly. And I think in parentheses you should say, or ask your counselor, but that's just me. And they can fill out all the information, where they are, the counselor's name, phone number, the patient's name, when they're getting out, and where they're going to be, it says released, but where they're going back to. And what this form does is it gets sent to that Minneapolis Intergroup office where the temporary contact coordinator will pull those and put them into a list. And what happens is we have volunteers who man the desk 2 days a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, three days a week. See, I'm not well yet, I'm telling you. So from Tuesdays and Thursdays and Saturdays. And they work through a process. We get the new ones that come in. So what we try to do is find a contact for these people that are getting out of treatment. Because the most important thing, the slipperiest, the easiest way for someone to go back out or not follow through with this opportunity to get and stay sober is when they leave the treatment center, then what happens? And so we have this program, and you're going to hear quite a few of these programs that are coming up where they're all around the country, the Bridging the Gap. And we give that opportunity. We give that person. Well, we give two opportunities, actually. The first opportunity is to the newest member coming in. But the second opportunity is to an AA member to do that joy of helping others, that opportunity for them to contact this person. And you're not going to be their sponsor. You're going to get them into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, get them to meetings, have them meet people, get a good, healthy group around them so that they can get maintained and start working through this program. I kind of wish I would have taken advantage of this when I was going through all this. I probably would have saved myself a whole lot of headache, but you know what? I had to go through what I had to go through to get to the point where I'm at. So that's just the way that is. And we have another program in Minneapolis, in southern Minnesota also, because I don't think you can talk about bridging the gap and just say treatment, because you also want to help bridge the gap between those correctional facilities. So we also have a correctional affiliates contact program. Now, this is an old form. We're having a new one done because ours is a little confusing. But the inmate gets an opportunity to fill this in. And either they're going to be incarcerated for a while or they're going to be coming out. And when they're coming out, they want to be able to, because they've gone through a program inside of the prison. They've been in a treatment program. And they're asking for a request for contact. It could be a request to write them while they're going to be in for a while, or that they're going to be getting out and they want to get to meetings and participate in the program of recovery. So we offer these two solutions for them in order for us to help out with that. I've manned the desk at the temporary contact, and one of the things it's interesting, because southern Minnesota is a pretty big area, and there's smaller cities that are further out west, and we have sometimes a heck of a time finding members of Alcoholics Anonymous that have signed up for the temporary contact desk when you're out near Sioux Falls, but you're really still in Minnesota. And it gets a little frustrating when you're calling and you can't reach. But the thing that really, really I found to be quite uplifting is when you put in that effort. You get out there and you use resources. Because we have a list of volunteers. It's in the database and we go and we check. But sometimes there's just nobody in that city. And what do you do? So a couple of times I end up calling over to South Dakota. and get a name over there of someone who may have contact with someone just across the river. And then we call them and say, hey, would you be willing to do this? And they say, sure. And then we give them their name and number, and then we ask for them to contact the desk and let us know if contact has been made so we can close out that program. And we'll give them, we'll contact the person and we'll give them a couple of times. And if we don't hear back, we either try to reassign that or we just close out the case because we're constantly getting those in. Another really great program, another great opportunity to learn how to, the joy of helping others is coming up. And Janine's going to talk a little bit more about that. But coming up in Minneapolis, and we would love to have you come up and visit us, September 10th, 11th, and 12th, is the Bridging the Gap Workshop. It's the 20th annual Bridging the Gap Workshop. Flyers look like this. I have some right here, so you can grab those on your way out. Or you can go to, and I'm sure you're all going to remember this, but it's btgww.org. I'll say that slower, btgww.org. And it's going to be up in Minneapolis, and it's September. Now, don't worry about coming to Minneapolis in September because the leaves might just be turning. It'll be nice and warm. You should come visit us. It'll be great. And so one of the things, I've gone to two of these. These are exciting opportunities to learn about how this program actually is working. I was in Akron in 2005, I think it was, and they had brought in a member who took advantage of the program who was in jail. And it was interesting to see because they had to bring like two or three of the guards with him, and he had the jumpsuit on, and they had the whole shackles and everything. And you're thinking, this guy's, you know, this is great. I think I'll be dead by the end of the night. But when you looked in this guy's eyes, there was peace, calm, serenity. And he sat and he told us his story. And the thing that was the most exciting about it is he smiled the whole time he was talking. And that was truly an amazing thing. I was touched. By the time I left that event, I was so excited to be part of this program where I have an opportunity to reach out and help another alcoholic and to help a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous bring that same message of hope to somebody. So if you don't have a temporary contact Bridging the Gap program in your area, come up and talk to us after, because we would like to be able to get you in touch with who you need to get in touch with in order to get that opportunity in your area. And what's that? I have time. See, I talk too fast, and I've gone through quite a bit of what I wanted to talk about. So, let's see. What else can I share with you about Bridging the Gap? Well, I hate to say this to you, but I've stretched as much as I can. If you do not, like I said, if you don't have a program, go ahead and come up and talk to us after. In a little bit, Janine will be giving you a little history of the Bridging the Gap program, of what, when it started, how it was evolved, and where it's at today. So I want to thank you very much, and I'm going to pass.
My name is Dave Woodard, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
And so happy to be here today. Just really pleased to have been asked to speak. My sobriety date is February 20th, 2003. My Bridging the Gap entry date is somewhere around the middle of the panel in 2005. And I can talk a little bit about that later. My home group is the Flimsy Reed. It's in American Canyon, California. And I've told people here that my tag says Vallejo, but that's only where I live. My home group's in American Canyon. So it might be more accurate to tell you where my home group is. Currently, I have the privilege of serving as the California Northern Coastal Bridging the Gap Area Chair. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about how I got into Bridging the Gap. I didn't know a thing about bridging the gap when I came into AA. In fact, I just wandered into an AA meeting. Maybe stumbled's a better word. And I met some really friendly people there. And later I found out that they were going to coerce me into attending this meeting of this little group called the Flimsy Reed. It turns out that group had 5 members. And it had been going for about a year at that time. And the reason it had any members at all was because the founder of the group noted that there were no AA meetings in the little town of American Canyon and thought there should be. So you can imagine in a group that small, and by the way, we met in a large closet and that was very cold in the winter and very hot in the summer. So, you know, one of the really important things was the first one there had to open the window and turn on the fan in the summer, or close the window and turn on the panel heater in the wintertime. So service wasn't even a topic that we talked about. It was simply something that you did if you got there first. The only elected commitment we had in that group was the secretary. And the member of the group that actually 12-stepped me into it was always asking me, what's your sobriety date again? And I tell him, and he said, oh, only 3 months. Turns out, of course, the requirement for secretary of the group was 6 months. And there was no vote. It was simply assumed that this new meat, you know, this fresh meat, would be the new secretary. Anyhow, that was my introduction to service in AA. It really came very naturally. So a little while later, a couple of years later, in fact, I had since served as secretary of several groups, treasurer of a couple of groups, and miscellaneous job was NAA that needed to be done. And I was looking around for something else. I was looking around for whatever my next commitment was going to be. Because by this time, of course, I had discussions with that individual that, you know, runs your life for a while, called a sponsor, and was convinced that one of the ways I was going to stay sober was to stay in service. So I wandered into the district meeting one night, and they were talking about the open positions they had. And one of those positions was, oh, by the way, my group already had a GSR, central office rep. You know, we were covered, so there was nothing there for me yet. But one of the openings they had was for the Bridging the Gap chair for the district. And I had read the Bridging the Gap pamphlet, and it seemed like a pretty good idea. So in my innocence, they always told me that you don't have to be qualified for an AA job. I volunteered, and much to my surprise, I was elected by acclamation. I know none of you have experienced that, have you? You know, it took me a while to figure out that Bridging the Gap is an implementation of some techniques we use for 12-step work. I attended a session here yesterday that was talking about 12-stepping the old-fashioned way. And the message I got from that session was the 12-step consists of getting a drunk to a meeting and asking them the right questions about their motivation. We kind of do that in a different way in Bridging the Gap, but it's not a matter of the 12 step being different. It's a matter of the technique. How many of you here are involved with Bridging the Gap? Oh, a couple. Okay, very good. If you're not involved, you're still in the right place, because hopefully if you're not involved in Bridging the Gap, we might be able to encourage you to get involved. And if you are involved, you know you want to stay involved. Some of the techniques I was talking about have changed quite a lot. As almost everybody knows, Dr. Bob was really big into getting people into medical detox before they came into AA, because he really believed that you couldn't even start to think about AA until you were medically pretty stable. I heard a story a couple of years ago. Our area has a Bridging the Gap forum every year, in addition to what Janine's going to talk about. And at that forum, one year, we heard a story that was attributed to Bill W. and Dr. Bob. And it concerned one of the techniques. And I don't know if this story is true, by the way, so I'm just telling you this anecdote to illustrate how things might have changed. The story concerns being able to get somebody into detox in the hospital that Dr. Bob had privileges at. Now, a lot of the time, what he did was prevail upon his friends. Apparently, he was well-liked in the at the hospital. One of his friends, a nurse, to get a room kind of off the record that they could bring a drunk to. Or in the other case, point out a drunk that he and Bill could talk to. Well, this particular technique was a little more direct. The story goes that Bill and Dr. Bob would go find themselves a drunk, I mean a real drunk, and haul him back to Dr. Bob's house and lay him out on the lawn and then call the police. And the reason they did that, I'm told, is because that was one of the few ways you could legitimately get into the medical detox, was to be arrested and have the police refer you there. Like I said, I don't know if that story is true or not, but you know, we've done a lot of things differently over the years. So what's different about the way we do 12-step work today? Well, for one thing, alcoholism is much more accepted socially, medically. It's accepted and recognized by the courts, our whole legal system, probation, even the police. In fact, I don't know how it is in other places, but in California, and you know, you probably think I know this from personal experience, if you're arrested for DUI, the first thing the officer asks you is if you're an alcoholic. So that kind of adds some legitimacy to this story about Bill and Dr. Bob and having drunks arrested. And the biggest part of that recognition that alcoholism gets today is that it's a treatable disease, thanks in part, I think, to what happened 75 years ago and became Alcoholics Anonymous. We have an abundance of treatment facilities. We also have a lot of treatment going on in penal institutions now. Corrections officials recognize that some of their recidivism problems come from alcoholics. In fact, a very large part of that. So some of the jails and prisons have actually instituted their own treatment programs. And in my area, we actually cooperate with the H&I committee, which is hospitals and institutions, who deals primarily with lockups, to be able to get the information about inmates as they're being released and try to get them to bridge in the gap contact. And, you know, you'd think with all this treatment and everything, we wouldn't need bridging the gap, because people go to treatment programs and they get educated about alcoholism, and they know all about it. They know all about AA. In fact, in Napa County, there are a number of treatment facilities, and all of those treatment facilities stress the first three steps and getting to Alcoholics Anonymous when the client leaves. Well, I kind of boiled it down to the need for PTG revolves right around that thing that we've all had problems with, or at least I've heard that we have, and that's called fear. We have a fear that somebody will see us there. Ooh. Well, if they're there. and they probably saw us before anyhow. And I won't know what to do. I won't know how to act. You know, it's like being in church. You don't know when to stand up. You don't know when to sit down. And I won't know anyone. That's kind of in contradiction with that first fear, isn't it? But that's the way we think. Well, to allay those fears, we in BTG try to get a contact to go with you to your first meeting and introduce you around and get you connected with some people, maybe even a sponsor. So, you know, that's pretty much why we're here. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about how we operate. In my area, divided up by district into Bridging the Gap district committees. And each district has a chair. Each district has its own committee structure. We are autonomous, after all. The districts mostly are consist of, first of all, the telephone coordinator, the most important person in Bridging the Gap, I might add. The telephone coordinator's job is to to call people and get a volunteer contact for someone who's being released from a treatment facility or corrections. Then we have the presenters, we call them. And I'll explain a little bit more about that in a minute. And the bulk of the members of the district committee are the volunteers themselves, people who have volunteered to do this 12-step work. I was just asked before this meeting started by my friend from Arizona about where you get volunteers to do these contacts. And one of the techniques I've used is to ask the General Service representatives to pass around a sheet that we make up where volunteers can fill out their vital statistics so we know who they are and how to contact them. And I told Rick also that one of my techniques is to ask the central office for their 12-step list. After all, that's what we're talking about. We have experiences where frequently, people who are being released are not don't live in the area where the treatment center was. They might live anywhere in the United States, or for that matter, in one case we had a person from London, England, that we placed. And in those places that don't have BTG, they may call it something else. They may call it pre-release program treatment, many other things. We've learned that if we call their central office or intergroup number and ask for the coordinator of the 12-step list, we get a contact for that person. So, you know, we try to reach out anywhere in the country, or for that matter, anywhere in the world, and place people. I've even had calls to Texas, believe it or not. Okay, so that's pretty much how it works. I hope you're going to ask some questions about that. We've had some pretty good results with our techniques. We've been fortunate to be able to have to tell you during the flag ceremony last night, there was a country that we actually had the privilege of helping get started with Bridging the Gap. And other states, other areas, and, you know, it's just been a joy to be able to help get that started. How effective is Bridging the Gap? We may never know, no more than we know how effective our individual 12-step work is. We do know that last year, we provided Bridging the Gap contacts for about 1,300 drunks. This year, we're looking at 1,500 to 1,700 drunks that we might be able to help into AA. So, you know, that's the reward, and that's as far as it goes. Thank you all very much.
I'm Janine. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date's June 1st, 1992. For that, I'm grateful. My home group is Sober Skirts in St. Joseph, Missouri, District 2, Area 39, Western Missouri. Excuse me. And currently, I serve that group as their General Service Representative, their GSR. And I also continue to be on our district an area coordinator's list for Bridge the Gap, have been almost since I drew a sober breath or shortly thereafter. I also currently, of course, serve as the Bridge the Gap workshop weekend coordinator, at least for this year and next, and then we'll rotate again. And I've had that opportunity previously as well, earlier when I got involved with at least that workshop. And today, you know, I'm going to kind of tell you a little bit not only about, you know, service and doing bridges, but how I was bridged into Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm going to kind of go through a sequence of things and actually how I was bridged into the service of the different committees and crossovering into committees and carrying the message. You know, when I was 13, I was actually starting to get run-ins with the law due to my drinking. By the time I was 14, I had already ended up in hospitals. Back then, of course, that was about the time when the big boom of treatment centers for adults, of course, not for adolescents. And, I ended up in a coma from alcohol poisoning at the age of 14 and started my journey of intervention. Well, I didn't want what anybody had even. So, and Bridge the Gap was not even a word. You know, it may have been, but it wasn't actually a committee or a structure of 12-step work coordinated. I spent another 15 years of literal hell, you know, going to jails, institutions, near-death experiences, and not really being honest enough to get into. I've heard a lot of people and different speakers and, you know, where they had actually gotten sober and stayed sober at those young ages and were introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hadn't been at that time. But in 1990, I found myself in a situation in a county jail, and AA was being brought into that facility. It did enough for me to screw up my drinking for a little while, but, of course, at least the seed of AA was planted. And a few months later, actually in about 6 months, I ended up in treatment, forced into treatment. So there was my real first experience with formal treatment through my own drinking. And then, of course, from there, what was supposed to be 30 days in treatment ended up into what I consider a seven-month nightmare because I was in treatment for 90 days and then psych wards throughout the Northwest and actually into the center part of Missouri. So my experiences in trying to even get sober, led me from jails and institutions, mental institutions, all these things that, of course, in our area, in our district, a lot of that committee work crosses over. We might have a treatment committee and we do have a treatment committee and a corrections committee and a Bridge the Gap subcommittee and all these things, and even public information and cooperation with the professional committees, but a lot of that work intertwines and crosses over, and so that I think led me in this journey to doing those things, and also was sponsored into that journey once I got sober. And when I was in that institute, the last insane asylum, and hopefully will be never again, which that place now is our prison system, one of our prisons in my town. When I was in that institution, my brother, who was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous at that time, bridged me from that institution in 1991 to what became my first home group. He was just doing 12-step. I don't even know if he realized he was doing 12-step work, but it was for me. He bridged me into that group, and of course, I had to do another short stint of drinking to get sober. But that was my home group, and I got a sponsor and started, because back then, and I we do it sometimes now, but I think we've gotten a little lax sometimes as far as my sponsor said, where are you going to be at Wednesday night? And I had no legitimate place to be, so she says, we're going to go to this treatment center, and my sisters in sobriety also were strongly encouraged to be there. We were told to be there. We didn't have an out of, do you want to come? No, you show up. And that was my journey. And I was a few months sober, and they've never got me to shut up since. I've done committee work. And I just found a passion in doing that. But it was through sponsorship and a legacy that was passed on. Excuse me. I try to use one of these waters. I've tried to continue that journey of serving God and my fellows from that. I think that I was possibly one of the longest treatment clients in outpatient treatment, sober even. I always had issues, so I had to stay in. But I was doing service work in Alcoholics Anonymous from that early sobriety and became alternate GIR, which is a group institutions rep, and then the GIR and the district rep and Bridge the Gap chair. We have in our area, we have a northern and southern chair, and I served in those commitments and our treatment committee and corrections committee. So did a lot of that service and continue to do that service. So I ended up, like I say, getting on our Bridge the Gap coordinators list for our district early in sobriety and have remained on that because we believe in long-term. It's just like with the workshop for Bridge the Gap. If it's a long-term commitment. It's not some people in their areas rotate every 2 years, even off that long-term list for our Bridge the Gap workshop. But in our area, you know, our new people that rotate in get on it, and if you want to stay, you stay on it. So some of us have been really long-term, you know, coordinators for that. And the coordinator's position, in, at least in our district, in our area, that coordinator is like what was already said, is we coordinate those bridges from those facilities to the AAs that are on those lists to be contacts to actually meet with that individual and get them in across the threshold of AA and then introduce them to not only AA but maybe a sponsor, a phone list, other meetings, not just their home group but other meetings, and do it just hopefully like the pamphlets tell, you know, tell us that or suggest that we can and do. Anyway, in 93, I was sponsored actually into carrying meetings into the men's adult prison system and have continued till today, you know, doing that kind of service. But in our area, of course, treatment corrections works real closely through the parent committees of our Bridge the Gap, at least at this point. So everybody kind of works real close together in doing that. Excuse me. And we update those lists pretty regularly, and our central offices have those lists as well as their, yeah, because some people want to be on a Bridge the Gap list. You know, some only want to do treatment, some want to do corrections, some don't care. They'll do it, you know, any call they get, but we try to at least respect what that person that wants to be a contact, whatever their fears or whatever. And they also have a separate 12-step call list. And our central offices usually keep track of those. You know, I'm not good with keeping statistics of how many bridges, you know, how many calls, how many requests, how many letters, or how many we've coordinated over that time. Our central office tries to keep track of those numbers. And then, of course, we bridge them back to the areas of wherever they're going to go home to or their home plan is. And, you know, not only before I got involved with this workshop for Bridge the Gap, we were already bridging people outside of our own area. So, you know, we had people that were going to that workshop and bringing back the information to our area committees. And in the year 2000, actually, that's when I actually went to a Bridge the Gap workshop because our area treatment chair said, you know, we need volunteers, show up, you know, so I showed up and haven't missed one since, you know, by the opportunity and fortune of being able to. You know, from that, we've adopted, by going to that workshop, there's a library that's a collective resource library of different areas in the United States and Canada that have put information in there, and we're putting it into a digital format. Our goal is to have that ready for September's event from different areas on how they bridge, you know, maybe, you know, temporary contact programs, Bridge the Gap, you know, like was said, different labels and names, but we're all doing, I believe, basic 12-step work, just coordinated when we're in these committees and calling it this. But that library has, just like I say, a collective repository of information on how other people have done it, skits maybe of how to go in and not only bridge the individual from that treatment center to AA or the correction center to AA, but how we can meet with the professionals to get those things into those facilities. Because I know at least in our district, there, you know, we get something started, you pass it on to the next person that drops the ball, and, you know, you pick it back up. And I've been fortunate enough or misfortunate enough, I don't know, between myself and my children have been of several facilities. So, you know, after getting out, I've built a rapport with a lot of professionals. And so, you know, by being sober, You know, I've kept those reports, and a lot of times I can go back in and bring people along. You know, and that's what we do. We have to drag those people along, or they voluntarily go along and keep that report going so that we can get into those facilities, not only to take just AA meetings, but informational meetings for Bridge the Gap. And hopefully, I believe, and I was taught, that it's our responsibility as members of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not the treatment center, the professional's responsibilities to carry our message or for them to carry those people to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's our responsibility to carry the information into them, the professionals and the clients or the offenders, the potential AA, to get them across the threshold and to give them enough information to know where we're at. And our own traditions. You know, their house, their rule. I believe in that, you know, but if it violates our traditions as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's certain things that I just can't do, you know. But we try to cooperate, and so therefore, by not only going to the Bridge the Gap workshop, but being active in my area, we've plagiarized from other areas with this resource library. Request for contact forms and or, you know, different ways of doing things so that we can give the professionals information so they can pass it on to their clients. Even if we're not able to be there physically ourselves, those people can still contact Alcoholics Anonymous and get a contact. And, you know, one thing is over the last several years in the state of Missouri, basically a lot of funding's been cut from different treatment programs, and you almost have to go commit offense to go to prison to go to treatment a lot of times. But there is a treatment. It's basically a contracted treatment inside the prison system. And so that, you know, is a lot of why we had to create some requests for contact forms that would work for treatment and corrections. Because it's easy to go to a treatment center and hand somebody a phone number and say, hey, call me when you get out, or coordinate it with the facility to give them some names, first and last names of who's the coordinator in that district so they can at least contact that one person and coordinate it out. Been in a prison system and a treatment center in a prison, it's different. And so therefore, we filter those through our central office, and that's why they have, you know, our lists for contacts, so then we can, of course, get that to where it needs to be. And then the bridge can be made. Of course, with the Bridge the Gap workshop, I'm going to kind of tell you a little bit of the history and what we actually do there. I know in our area, Institutions Weekend is where AAs and the different committees, and it's evolved to get professionals involved in that so that we can try to network. So that started originally in 1976 in our area. And in May, typically in May of every year, there's this workshop. And in May of 1991, evidently, some different people from different areas, different states, came to that, as best history serves me, in my memory. They came to that Institutions Weekend and gathered information. They felt the need to put together a workshop. And Bridge the Gap pamphlet had been already discussed at the conference level. And in 1991 was, of course, the pamphlet came out. But in September of 1991 is the first Bridge the Gap workshop weekend, and they called it Worldwide Bridge the Gap at that time, but then adopted it as Bridge the Gap workshop weekend, because I don't think at that time we was really doing worldwide, but now we do. You know, it's kind of did a switch around. We do bridges everywhere, not just in our districts in our area in the United States and Canada, but it reaches out. But anyway. I can tell you where some of them have been in those early years, but for the last several years, I know exactly where they were and what state, and, you know, and have been fortunate to go. And this year we'll be in Bloomington, Minnesota. And like I say, the flyers are there, September 10th, 11th, and 12th. And it's the Minneapolis, St. Paul, Hilton. And at that workshop annually, different areas come together to do presentations, and we learn a lot and we network a lot within those areas at that workshop. And of course, you know, I've met these guys before. I've met several that are out in the audience. And it's just a neat thing to go somewhere and you know somebody. And some people actually have a problem with turning over a client that's coming out of treatment or somewhere to some way, somebody, some name on a list across the United States to make the bridge. You know, not me. You know, a lot of these people I've met. You know, maybe I've only met them on the phone or on an email or one workshop here or there. But these are people that have a passion for doing coordinated 12-step work. We're just getting that person to AA and hopefully turning them over to someone that can take them through the steps and what have you. So, you know, that's what we do at that workshop. We network those things and and that long-term contact list. We have a hard copy that we keep within the fellowship. And on the website at btgww.org, you can go in there whether you're a professional or you're an AA doing a referral from those facilities, and you can put in some information. It'll email it out. It's a secure website, but you can get that request for contact no matter where. We'll work and try to get it to the place it needs to be and through that. And it actually has a secure way of getting in for those that actually are on the list or are doing the work, you know, and certain ones have the password and can get in there and update information and get to some of the actual hard copy list as well. But, you know, it is a secure website. And if you ever want to become a Bridge the Gap long-term contact or for just a couple of years, just let us know. We'll put you on that list and hopefully we'll be able to make those bridges. And I have actually done a bridge one time. It was one of those things where the lady had already got out that day, and from Washington State, if I remember, it was Washington to Oregon State. There's a, you know, treatment. She was either getting out of one to go to the other, vice versa. Anyway, I'd gotten emails. I got on the phone. The girl had already got out that day. And in a network of calls and emails, before that evening was out, that person had a bridge. You know, they'd already hit the street, but we had somebody who was going to contact them and go and take care of those things. And that's just as a result of being involved. I say some of that history, if you come to the workshop, every workshop, every year we do a presentation on the history. And one of the co-founders, well, I always say the co-founders of this workshop, will be doing that history this time. And hopefully one of the other guys that's coming up from St. Louis, who's our archivist, we're hoping that he'll be there and maybe get it just firsthand how this, you know, how this started, this workshop started, and to try to do some coordinated 12-step work through Bridge the Gap. Anyway, you know, I really want to, you know, not only thank, you know, my district, my home group, and some of the people that helped make sure that we got here, and some of the girls that came down, and we drove straight through from St. Joe to here. Couple of pit stops, but we were delirious by the time we got here, and that's okay. If some of you would have seen us, you might have thought we had went back out, because we were just out, you know, just sleep deprivation. But you know, someone who created that bridge to get me to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I can never totally ever repay what I've been freely given. But I know that from the gates of hell and death's doors, you know, I made it. And I can, that's why I think I stay involved, not only in this, not only doing bridges, but doing 12-step work. And I like doing 12-step work the old-fashioned way. I've had the opportunity a few, very few times. but if it wasn't for those that came before me, I wouldn't and wouldn't have strongly encouraged that I not only work through the steps with them, live this, you know, life and this journey, you know, but strongly encouraged that I get involved in service and get out of myself, because the three legacies is not me just getting sober for me. It's a whole lot more than that. It's getting involved. It's learning not only the steps, the traditions, the concepts, and carrying that on. And I, you know, I'm one of those odd ducks that I like concept studies and things like that. But, you know, I believe that A is not a destination. It's just a path to a lifelong journey. I truly believe that. And with the help of making bridges and staying involved, you know, it'll happen. I do want to briefly say before I sit down that some of the stuff that we've created in our area as a result of, you know, doing workshops and also working closely with the eastern area of Missouri. And before my sobriety time, Missouri was evidently one area, but then it divided, and I don't know the whole story of that, but eastern area and western area of Missouri, because of state facilities, you know, prisons and treatment things, but we actually have worked closely with one another and put together a little booklet-like thing for, you know, so we can give it to the professionals so they'll have something to refer back to. You know, it also has the information of the how to get in touch with the contact for the offender or the client. And so we have some collective information that we can pass on, because through literature and AA, it can help get those people through the door. Before I sit down, I'd also like to say I'm very honored to be here today, to be with all of you, and to be even asked to do this. It's definitely a privilege, and I thank you all for allowing me to share, and I hope we see you in Minnesota.
I'd like to thank all three speakers. Thank you so very much. And, yeah. And I, too, would like to express what an honor and a privilege it is to be here, one among many, here at the Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous, sharing and hearing Experience, Strength, and Hope. And I thank you all for attending. And if there are any people who would like to come to the mic and specifically ask questions from the panel, feel free to do so.
Hi, I'm Rick Starbuck, an alcoholic.
Hi,
I got involved in bridging the gap through serving as Area Treatment Facilities Coordinator in Area 03, Arizona. Dave, I want to thank you for the help that you gave us getting started. And I want to, you know, including that yellow booklet of yours, and I know that you guys are really, really hard on follow-ups and what the results are. We're not quite there yet, but I have a concern of what we're doing that because we make our assignments by email rather than telephone. In our case, and by the way, we've gotten up to about 600 a year now, and we're still growing in a year and a half. We get about a third that we know are going to AA meetings, 50% that have at least been called, and many of those are going to AA meetings, and about 20% no contact. Rarely is it that they don't want to go to AA. It's usually an illegible phone number from somebody in detox. Can you tell me, you know, what your stats are? Thank you.
I don't actually have the statistics on that, but just based on experience, your numbers are about normal. Unfortunately, a lot of things happen between the time someone fills out a request for help and the time that they're actually released or, you know, go to their home. We do know that there are some techniques that improve those ratios, such as calling the person while they're still in the treatment facility or still incarcerated. That's not always possible. That gets to be a real tricky one. But there are failures in not necessarily failures of the system, but just the way it happens.
Hello, everyone. My name is Chuck Anderson. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. My home group is the Northwest Oaks in Palatine, Illinois. And I'll be leaving here tomorrow, driving to St. Joseph, where my parents live. I'm also part of District 22 in Northern Illinois area. And this Bridging the Gap has been, you know, clawing at me for a few years. I spent a lot of time in treatment center early on, about 5 years into my sobriety. My sobriety date is June 13th of 1996. And I've always been interested in helping those folks. I never have been in a treatment center myself. But nonetheless, my question to you is this. In this day and age of technology, I'm wondering either from a state or maybe a GSO level, if there's been any discussion about trying to use the Internet as an e-tool to better reach out to different states, counties, areas. One of the challenges in our district, and I think one of the reasons why we're having a lot of people step up in the area to become a district chair of BTG, is very seldom do they ever get released to the same area where they went in the treatment center. So they go to one treatment center in one district, in the way AA breaks things down, and they end up in a city in a different district. So from my perspective, at least, I should just speak for myself, I've always felt, wow, that's a lot of heavy lifting, you know. Whereas I thought if you had this, for instance, this website, btgwww.org, or I think that's what it is, right, some way of kind of simplifying that and the contact management aspect of BTG. Can one of you maybe address that? The question is, how do you go across district, maybe even area, maybe even state, in a fairly easy way without having to make 800 phone calls? The AA directory?
Okay. I mean, I know in the past, before I got on the long-term Bridge the Gap workshop contact list, as a GSR or a DCM, I would go to the directories for the U.S., Canada, Eastern, Western. And, you know, and I still do sometimes, if there is no one on our contact list that's in Podunk, Missouri, you know, whatever, you know, I'll go to that list, find somebody that's a GSR, call them, and, you know, and other people have done that as well. But with Bridge the Gap Workshop Weekend, we have a long-term contact list for quite a few of the areas and several people in a lot of the areas. We still need other names, and hope as the time goes on, we do get other areas for other cities. And that contact list is a coordinator's list, just like you would at your local level, but this is the U.S. and Canada. And then it's our responsibility as those long-term contacts to get it to the area, and then it'll filter into the district. So we're all doing that, you know. And sometimes I've had people on those lists in our district that says, you know, I've been on that list for 2 or 3 years. I've never got a call. Well, you know, stay on it, stay sober. You might. You know, but the thing is just to be willing to be on the list in case we need you. And we, you know, send people for, you know, out of Missouri. A lot of times Florida is sending people, cause, you know, because they get people from all over and they go back. But just encouraging. But that BTGWW for Bridge the Gap Workshop Weekend is what the BTGWW.org. And you can go on there and it'll... You can put the information of where you need a contact, and it'll go out. and we'll try, you know, get a hold of you or attend the workshop, and you can get a hard copy, and you'll have a list to go through.
Thank you.
My name is Pat Salter. I'm from Bracebridge Thursday Night Group in Ontario, Canada, and I have attended your BTG workshop. My comment is that we had a service day, and we had a person come from Hope Place, and one of the comments that she made, and we have been finding in treatment centers, is that they have fewer and fewer people who work in the treatment centers who have any familiarity with AA. They don't have any alcoholic backgrounds. They're not alcoholics themselves. They are fresh out of school and really don't know us. Her suggestion, and I think it's an excellent suggestion, and you might have a comment on that, and that is she thinks we should be bridging the gap prior to the person coming into treatment, because the person coming into treatment normally has several weeks to wait, and that's when they're most vulnerable to go back out drinking, and that's when they need the 12-step call from AA. Have you considered that?
You know, if I had my way, we would be doing Bridging the Gap presentations to any group we could identify every day of the year. Unfortunately, we run into two problems. Number one, if we do the Bridging the Gap presentation too early, by the time they're through treatment, they're starting to feel better. They have totally forgotten about that Bridging the Gap thing and that AA thing, and that's the loss of a possible new member. So that, I know that's not a real good answer, but it's the best one I have. You know, we try to get to people wherever and whenever we can. That's the first time I've heard that suggestion. Yeah, that would be a good thing to do.
Hi, Brian Murphy, alcoholic. Just to follow up on that, one of the, you know, if you try to bridge a gap before they get into treatment, how are you going to, you know, get into contact? One of the things that you really need to do ahead of that is what we do in Minneapolis is we take information meetings to the treatment facilities, and we talk to them about what Alcoholics Anonymous is and what it isn't. And if you get a whole bunch of fresh counselors in there, we also talk to their, we have a program that goes to the University of Minnesota that talks to those classes. And if we can educate the educators and if we can educate the alcoholics too, I mean, along that line, if we try to get them to, how are you going to make that person call Alcoholics Anonymous though? That's the thing that runs through my head. If you try to bridge that gap, if they can't get into treatment right away, and you say to them, here, call this number. Why would they want to do that? I mean, I didn't want to do that. Maybe my life, maybe court ordered me to go here. I mean, it's a huge slippery slope, but I think the easiest thing to do is to educate the treatment centers, tell them who we are and what we do and what we don't do. And if you want to, you know, call them before you come here, fine, then they may not go. You know, why go to treatment? You don't need to. Alcoholics Anonymous is a treatment for you. So, I mean, that's what you have to look at, and that's what we try to do is to educate the treatment centers. And once you educate them, that's the best we can do to start that all out. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Stevenson. I am an alcoholic. Very grateful to be here today and be sober. And Jean and I did some email. I'm very grateful to meet her. I serve as the Area 51 Treatment Facilities Coordinator for the state of North Carolina. And I have a question. Our area decided several years ago that as an area, we weren't going to establish a Bridge the Gap program, but we would have our districts establish the individual programs. And I'm wondering if you have any concrete suggestions how I, as the area coordinator, can encourage that. What I've been doing is doing a lot of education about Bridge the Gap, and I've, at every event we do, I have started the Bridge the Gap contact list. And what I plan to do then, once it's established and I have a lot of names on it, is get that to the individual TF coordinators in the district so they have names to work with. And I guess I could hook it up with your list too. But encouraging each district to start a program from scratch is where kind of we are, seems like a very momentous job, and I'm wondering if you could encourage or suggest some ways to start that process. We have about 38 districts in the state of North Carolina that, and not, I don't think any of them have an up and running Bridge the Gap program.
I'm Janine Barr, I'm an alcoholic. Actually, in the resource library, there are experiences, and even on some of the CDs, of different areas, because that's why we come together at that workshop, is to, one area has started from scratch, and in a, through a series of even recording, you know, how that district and area got those things together. You know, it's all recorded in the library or on the CDs, but each area is going to be different. Because in our area, we, at our area level, Bridge the Gap is a subcommittee of treatment correction. So we coordinate in the districts by just going to the groups, you know, and getting contacts on them. We don't even have district, actual district chairs for Bridge the Gap. We have maybe six, anywhere from two to six. Each district has a coordinator for Bridge the Gap. And then, of course, they're under the treatment corrections. So then that goes into the area level in the committees as far as getting that started and keeping the information flowing back and forth. But we put together the list by going out into the groups and getting a list together and keeping it. And those coordinators actually, you know, like maybe the with four in our district, they have that full sometimes a 12-step call list or contact list. So they coordinate with the facilities to go into that list and contact the coordinator. You know what I'm saying? And in our eastern area of Missouri, they actually made Bridge the Gap a standing committee in their area where we're still a subcommittee. So it functions totally different. So what may work with one area is not necessarily what is going to work for you. But definitely if you come to the workshop and or we can send you the library list, you can get some of that information and see what's going to fit for you. I don't know if somebody else.
In Minnesota, we in Southern Area 36, we have the whole southern state of Minnesota. It's 26 districts that we have in there. And what we have is a central location at Minneapolis Center Group. They have a desk there that they lease from Minneapolis Center Group where all of the contacts go in, and there's a coordinator who the area treatment chair, the temporary contact coordinator, coordinates all of that through that office. So those forms that I showed you earlier, they go to that one location. So what you might want to consider is finding a central location, maybe at an intergroup that you have, and talking with them and setting up a contact coordinator, being one person who would then work with all of the district treatment center people and or treatment chairs, and then set up that one location, which everything would flow into there, and then you can source it out through that, because that's how we have it set up in Minneapolis, and it works really well.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank
you. These are spectacular questions, but due to time constraints, if we could end with the gentleman at the mic, we'd appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. I'm Waddell. I'm an alcoholic. And sobriety is October 27th, 1987. Been working in treatment centers since March of 1990. And I'm the aftercare coordinator for the treatment facility that I work at. I wish I could say I was up to date on Bridging the Gap, but I got a report that I'm not. Been really pleased with the information I've been receiving today. But I do have, what I wanted to share was that we have the program that I do. There's a similar form, and I definitely wear two hats, by the way. And And I can count the days that still have some fingers left on the 22 years I've been sober that I've missed a meeting in a day. And I have a sponsor, and the sponsor has a sponsor and all of that. But I also am on the professional side of the house here and do that aftercare program. And I would agree with the statement that AA has got a large responsibility here, but so does the professional side of the house. And the form that I call a continuing care plan that they get when they're leaving treatment, and I work with them while they're on it in treatment, it sounds like the forms what you're talking about, where they have a sponsor and a temporary sponsor, and their assignment is to get that temporary sponsor while they're in treatment, and also to fill out a chart for every day in the week with listed with meetings and meetings locations and telephone numbers and stuff like this, which they are, the assignment is, the continuing care assignment is to have this completed by the time they get out of treatment and work on it all the time that they're through, you know, in treatment, to have something when they walk out of the door. And bridging the gap is just a, you know, could they meet two programs meet, and it almost sounds like a duplication of work when what you all were explaining here. So good idea, I think, you know, and maybe you knew this, maybe you didn't, okay, but seeing what type of continuing care, aftercare plan that they have while they're in treatment is would be a bridging the gap sort of thing, the first responsibility to do there. My responsibility when I get back is to put questions there or something enforced about bridging from on their assignment about bridging, contacting someone from bridging the gap to continue on in AA, if you follow me on that. But I don't know if I had a question there. You answered a lot of my questions before I got up here. Thanks.
I'd now like to close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer.